Hi there, welcome along to this week's Racing Postcast. It's Monday the 26th of April. I'm Maddie Plough and this week I'm joined by Mark Boylan, James Stevens and Paul Binfield is back on the podcast, I'm delighted to say. Now, it's been a pretty eventful week in the world of racing. Coming up, we're going to talk about the incoming ban of Benoît de la Sayette testing positive for cocaine, as well as Rab Havlin's ride aboard Stowell, which caused him to get a 21-day ban at Lingfield during the week. And the controversy didn't stop there either, with the weekend's big highlight, the Bet365 Gold Cup. The placings were reversed. So we're going to talk about all of that, as well as the upcoming Punchestown Festival, and indeed the Guineas, both the 2000 and 1000 editions taking place on Saturday and Sunday. Excellent time of year. Without further ado, let's get stuck into it. Now, let's address these talking points first off, guys. I mean, Benoît de la Sayette, let's start off with that one, because obviously he had a fantastic success in the Lincoln aboard Hakiki. A video was released of him at a party, I think sometime last month. He denied ever taking the drug, and now there's been a test come back positive. And according to the PGA chief executive, Paul Struthers, there's also two more cases in the pipeline. So we're seeing more and more cases like this arise. What's your view on it, James? Because although it's an issue in wider society, and obviously we can acknowledge that, it does seem like something else needs to be done to tackle it in our industry. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think this week was really sort of disappointing to read. I know we had the sort of incident regarding that video, as you just mentioned there, but sort of reading between the lines of what the quotes were passed on by the PGA, there's quite a poignant line there, but he said he moved back home to sort of get away from it, which is perhaps something that's perhaps the most worrying thing to come out of everything this week, really, the fact that he felt he had to move himself out of somewhere which he felt was having a presence on him. And I think that says a lot about the industry, a lot about the problems that we're facing. I mean, we've got to take the context of it. I mean, he is 18 years old. He was 18 in December 2020. You know, we're living in a pandemic. There's not a lot you can do. And I suppose everyone makes bad decisions and he's still young. So let's remember he's still got a huge career ahead of him. And we know how good he is, of course. So, you know, I hope he's not just going to be seen as the jockey that was involved in this incident, but more as a jockey who can sort of have his new career. But it's a massive problem in the game. What was sort of nice to hear is that this saliva testing is going to come in. I know sort of how it was discussed on the television by Paul Struthers there, was saying how it's going to sort of really help with quick fire testing. And I think more than anything, it sounds almost a bit more serious. And I think that's sort of a big part of it. You know, if jockeys go into a race course knowing that they could get caught at any time, it's a real big deterrent and it's going to make you think twice. You know, I think that's just as important as testing. It's just sort of knowing that structure's in place. So there's a lot of positivity taken from that. And I know saliva testing is also good in rugby. I know they've used it for concussion and stuff. So it's just a step forward in the right direction. And look, you know, it's a problem we're always going to have. It's wider society, but as if we've got a really vigorous sort of testing model in place, it's only going to help all sort of aspects of the sport.
Indeed, and he certainly won't be the first jockey to come back from a cocaine ban if he does indeed succeed in the future. Mark, this isn't an issue that's, you know, restricted to Britain. Obviously, there have been cases in Ireland as well. But something that I want to touch upon is Lee's column in today's paper, talking about the funding behind testing and how much it costs to get these saliva tests done or hair tests done. And it's not a straightforward response, is it? Because that money doesn't just come out of nowhere.
No, and I'm glad you mentioned Lee's column. It was very good. And I think he made a lot of important points in terms of the funding that's around it. You know, I think the suggestion of Kieran Schumark there with quarterly testing, hair testing, it does make sense ultimately. Finding the funds to do it is another question. As mentioned, I think £300,000 is kind of what it's estimated at. But if that's what's needed, like, there's been an awful lot worse £300,000 spent on different things down through the years. I think it's interesting as well, the IHRB statistics came out last week for 2020, and you know, the alcohol breath testing of riders in previous years, just to give an idea, it would have been kind of 974 tests taken in a year, 913, 777, 823, 854. That fell to 108 last year. But the drug testing did remain on a par with previous years. It was still more than 2018, despite all that went on with COVID. So I'm not too sure. That to me, that suggests kind of, that is the area that racing is very conscious that it does need to target. You know, there has been no positive breath test in Ireland for alcohol in a number of years, you know, but in terms of positives for drug testing of riders, we've had years with 4 and 5, and I think there was one last year in 2020. So it's certainly not just a British-only issue. It's a societal issue. I think the point that John Gosden made during the week in terms of, the dynamic of cocaine, not that it's something I'm familiar with on a personal level by any means, but, you know, if you are a rider and this is, you know, alcohol, the impact alcohol can have on you physically, weight, etc., carbohydrates and cocaine, it's not a shock that it is something that riders are engaged in. But it's I think overall, the two strands that you probably need to attach here are, you know, education of riders as to what the consequences are. I'm sure this has just been a nightmare for Benoit, who looks to be, an absolutely phenomenal talent in the saddle, and I've no doubt he will come back from this. He has the right backing, and John Gosden said he'll support him appropriately at this time. So I've no doubt he will come back, but I think you need to educate these guys on what's going to happen. I think even a few years ago, there was a very good video that came out of Fergal Lynch, the jockey, where he was talking about, the passing on of inside information, and relating to betting patterns with Miles Rogers and, the impact that had in his career, and it was pretty impactful to see. And I think, there have been good work by the, various strands of the PGA, BHA, with kind of the Jockeys Matter series. And, I think it just needs to be hit home as much as possible to young riders coming through that, the increased testing that's coming, if it does happen, the likelihood of you getting caught seemingly is going to increase with, saliva testing, etc. And the deterrent has to be there as well. It's not just bans, it's the reputational element of it. On your career immediately, and the emotional turmoil you go through, it's not as simple as just a one-off thing. So I really hope Benoit does come back, but it's going to be a challenge a few months from him regardless.
Do you think the legislation surrounding the bans needs to be harsher? Because we have seen, the likes of Oisin Murphy, even he's had his ban. He probably wouldn't have rode an awful lot during that stage, at least not in Britain anyway. Do you think that needs to change?
Potentially, in terms of a deterrence, a sizable ban, for when you are so young in this scenario, could be damaging, and it would be damaging. Possibly a little bit more, but I think the overall issue is just to have testing more rigorous, rather than, if I was making a change in terms of legislation or in terms of, your drug testing protocols, to me it would be bumping up your levels of testing, not necessarily bumping up the ban, although there are cases that, where there are different counteracting elements to it. Obviously Oisin's case, there was a different stipulation there in terms of how cocaine was said to have entered his system in that sense.
Yeah.
So I mean, look, it's a case by case thing, but if I was, I'd be hitting home education as I'm sure they are already doing, but really, really strongly, getting Kieran Schumacher has been a fantastic example of how to bounce back from something like that. And it's not just a case of, guys that are addicted. It's a recreational thing as well. So it does vary from case to case. And I'd be kind of hesitant to just jump on board right now and say, hand out much, much longer bans, because I think it's a more complex thing than that. But, these are people at the end of the day that are, I'm not saying when you're a professional sportsman, there are things expected of you and you have to be held to account in an industry.
And you're putting lives at danger as well.
Exactly.
And is at danger
Exactly. So look, it to me, I would really, really like to see greater levels of testing for all, across the board in all sports. I've looked at it in different things as well, with performance enhancing drugs in athletics. I used to look into that, bits and pieces like that. And it is an expensive business. There's no two ways about it. But if you want it to be right, you're going to have to pay for it. So hopefully a solution can be reached in that sense, even if it is the quarterly testing as have been suggested in these columns.
Yeah, well said. Well said, both James and Mark. Now, to Lingfield on Wednesday, there was a 1-mile 4-furlong novice stakes. It was won by Polling Day, the 9-2 favourite for Frankie Dettori and the John and Sadie Gostin training partnership. But the horse that caught the headlines was in second by head, the stablemate Stowell. And this was, well, I advise you to go back to the Racing Post website and watch the replay as make up your own mind as to what happened. But the stewards, anyway, eventually deemed jockey Rab Havlin guilty for not, you know, riding to the maximum ability. And it's been a really interesting case, this, because since the ban came out, we were wondering whether he was going to appeal it. He's not now. But John Gostin since come out and said he doesn't instruct his riders to strike his debutant performers on the racetrack. Now, that's something that we have seen not happen just this week, and indeed on the same day he said it in a race at Sandown Park involving Chiasma, a filly ridden by Frankie Dettori. But anyway, that's going off piece slightly here, although it's part of the issue. What did you make of this stole ride, James? Because I think a lot of people can indicate, even without using the whip, that there was more that Rab could have done to get this horse home in front.
Yeah, I agreed. And I think the fact he's been banned for 21 days suggests that the stewards felt exactly the same way. I mean, the whole idea of whether they should or shouldn't use the whip is down to the trainer at the end of the day. I mean, there's nothing to suggest there was anything with the betting patterns or anything, that there was something to look at this race and there was something bad going on. I think it was just a case of he was instructed to ride this horse in a certain manner, and perhaps the horse was significantly better than what they expected. I mean, it didn't look good from a sort of visual perspective, but I think from my sort of opinion on it all is that, you know, you have to be seen or to at least, you know, really give it everything if you've got a winning chance in any race, and the stewards do have to look into that regardless of whether it's a novice stakes at Lingfield or the Derby, or if it's a horse having their 10th run, 100th run, or their first run. I mean, it's got to be sort of clear among the picture. I don't think we can start saying, well, this horse has had its first run, so you know, you've got to be at least seen to be giving it everything you've got, because, you know, racing is a sport people bet on. It's a betting product. You know, it's got to be seen as if you are going to have a bet in a race, you're going to get a fair run for your money. And there will be people who watched that race that felt they didn't get a fair run for their money. So, look, I think the stewards have done the right thing. I mean, look, now John Gosden has come out and said, this is what I want my jockey to do first time. Fine, that's every bit. But from a visual perspective, it did look like that horse could have won the race, and, you know, you'd be frustrated if you backed him to win, for sure.
You would be, and I don't think it reflects well on racing at all. You know, people say, oh, well, the betting patterns show there wasn't money involved, but this is still a race in which, you know, betting exists, obviously. So it does come into account. Interesting point raised by a couple of people regarding publicising, perhaps, riding instructions. Mark, personally, I think that would be opening a huge can of worms. I'm not really sure how it would work, but what do you think about it, given he's now said that he doesn't like John Gosden, his debutantes, to be hit? I mean, that hasn't been the case in the last couple of weeks, so I think he's almost created a rod for his own back there.
The case of declaring kind of tactics or speaking about kind of your expectations for a run beforehand was seen with some Irish trainers that had gone to Britain a couple of years ago, where they were asked to come and speak beforehand. I don't know. I don't think that's continued in the months since. But I would be in agreement with you. I think to a certain degree, there is something we could learn. But there is always going to be an element of anything can happen in a race. You know, I even just thinking of examples when I heard that kind of idea float. I was thinking, you know, Kenboy and David Mullins in the Savills chase a couple of years ago, where you just change things mid-race. It happens every day of the week, like, where riders are doing things on instinct, changing things that they wouldn't typically do. I'm sure there would be scope for, you know, such kind of changes in your approach to a race than if you initially stated. But I do think it just gets messy when you do that. Look, I don't have a whole pile to add on the ride the other day. I think everybody could see what was there in front of them. You know, educational runs are something that is part of racing. I'm not saying it's something that is you know, 100% appealing to the eye at times, but I think if you this scenario, we see even the biggest stables, the biggest owners, it does happen where horses are given education and runs, and it is understandable for, you know, bringing on greenness and things like that. But, you know, when you do get into a winning position, which this horse did the other day, you would have expected a bit more of a strenuous effort, whether it is going for the whip or not. It's a matter of debate. But, you know, it's part and parcel of what we're going to see in this one. Just the way the race unfolded with the Godolphin horse beginning to come back to him as well at a pretty serious rate as well. It visually just wasn't the most appealing race to watch. So, but it is part and parcel of racing from the biggest yards to the smallest yards.
It is, and I think in defence as well, you know, this is a horse who's had a lot of problems and maybe hasn't been straightforward in the past. And even, I guess, with the comments John made regarding, you know, hitting horses first time out and how I was sort of criticising him, saying that, well, other of his debutants have been hit, I suppose, as well. You know, if you're aboard a green juvenile, you know, you rely on the whip as means of control and as safety as well. So it's a tool at the end of the day, and it's up to the jockeys and the trainers whether they wish to use it or not. It doesn't necessarily always mean that they're going for everything or indeed not trying just because they don't use the whip. So as you guys have said, it's a very sort of complicated issue. And on to another complicated issue, which is the matter of this weekend. We had the Bet365 Gold Cup, a race which throughout history, the result has been changed numerous times, and it happened again. Enrillo was first past the post for Paul Nichols and Harry Skelton, but after the final fence, he dinked and violently crashed into Kitty's Light, trained by Christian Williams and ridden by Jack Tudor. Eventually, Kitty's Light was third, with Potterman finishing second for Tom Cannon and Alan King. That horse was eventually called the winner after a steward's inquiry, with Enrillo demoted to third and Kitty's Light in second. Was this the correct result, bearing in mind the rules and how those rules were read, James?
When you put it like that, I suppose so, but I was pretty furious watching it. It's just, I mean, I backed Enrillo, to be fair, so that was the camp I was in, and I've got absolutely no problem with the fact Enrillo was interfered and didn't win the race. That's not a problem for me. What's frustrating for me, and I bet it's frustrating for all those involved with Enrillo and everyone involved with the race, is that one unfair result, the stewards deemed that result was unfair because there was interference. That's fair. We get that. They changed the result for a result that was perhaps even more unfair. A horse that we can all agree wasn't going to win that race was named the winner because of the rules that were in place. I think it's just ridiculous. You know, if we're going to change a result, we've got to change it for the purpose of making it the fairest result possible. Now, Potterman was second. Would he have won the race if there wasn't interference? No. Kitty's Light probably would have won. The stewards deemed that there was interference to Kitty's Light and that she was making a challenge. I mean, they either have to say, would Kitty's Light have won or not? It was between those two who was going to win the race. So I don't quite get why this rule has in place. I mean, I can understand it that they want to change it. But, you know, we've got to look at it and look at what's fair. Because if this was the big staying handicap 2 weeks ago, can you imagine the fury that racing would be under now? You know, one Grand National winner's checked out and a horse that wasn't going to win the Grand National was in. I know it's a bit different when it's four miles to Aintree and it's all a bit different. But if we use that as an example, racing would be under huge scrutiny now. You know, people would be saying, how is that fair? How is that fair? And we'd be explaining it and trying to explain it. And really, there is no explanation. You know, the stewards' inquiries and the changing of results, in my opinion, has to be to give the fairest outcome and the most likely winner. Potterman was not and is not and is never going to be the most likely winner of that race. The most likely winner was Kitty's Light. And if we're going to change a result, we have to change it so it reflects the most likely outcome, not the outcome which just suits the rules best.
Fantastic. Yeah, really interesting thoughts there. And I'd say I agree with that. Mark, I mean, there's been a few instances and cases in Ireland of this recently. Again, it's not an issue that is restricted to Britain. I mean, if you're a Potterman backer, you've been very, very lucky. If you're an Enrillo backer, you've been probably a bit unlucky as well. But if you're a Kitty's Light backer, you're very, very unlucky. Who do you think would have won? Because initially, I think Kitty's Light definitely would have won. I still think Kitty's Light probably would have won. But then I do think Enrillo just was doing absolutely nothing in front and was not wayward through tiredness. I think he was wayward because he was idling, and he's done that in previous races as well. What do you make of this finish to this race?
Yeah, I think Kitty's Light would have won. I think if it had got a clear run, it absolutely would have gone by. But I do, obviously, Enrillo has rallied again at the line when he straightened up, but he's committed the foul, so to speak. And, you know, as far as I could see, the rules, as they are, were policed correctly. And it mightn't be a satisfactory result if you're on Kitty's, if not might be, it isn't a satisfactory result if you're on Kitty's Light. But I think once you start, that they are the rules that we have in place. And once you start, you know, getting into, would this horse have finished second, even though it was third, when we're demoting, you know, it's already a point where, you know, initially when I think the exchanges were suggesting, you know, that it was kind of half in the balance, you know, it wasn't that it was straight away, you know, 1-10 that, you know, Kitty's, or that Potterman will be promoted first and that Enrillo will be disqualified. There is still a little bit of a decision that has to be made in those scenarios. And I think you'd have to have sympathy for Kitty's Light as an unlucky horse in this scenario. You have to accept that that does happen at times. And if we were to add in a scenario where we're, you know, thinking about promoting the third beyond the second, I just think it muddies the waters even more when we are already going to have decisions that are, you know, contested. All we just ask for, I think in this scenario, the rules were policed correctly that we have in place. All you would ask for in general is just, you know, consistency and clarity in whatever happens. Like there was Kilbeggan there during the week, there was a horse that was, there was a result that was reversed. And, you know, fair enough, if that's the standard we're going to go by, if that's what it is, well, you know, let it be that throughout. But when we have a case then when Brazos was keeping the race at Navan earlier in the year, like it just doesn't tally up. You know, we need to, if it's going to be one way, it has to stay that way. The race I'm referring to, Jaime Weiss and Miles Tinnell Upper at Kilbeggan last Thursday. You know, you can watch that back. It was deemed controversial by people with far more experience in the game than me. And I think even Noel Mead was a little bit surprised that he did get it in the stewards' room. But obviously, you know, if that's what the standard is, that's what the standard is. But it has to be kept to that. And if it isn't like that, you know, you have to just have a consistent policing of it. So that'll be my gripe with it in general. But if you are a Kitty's Light backer, my heart goes out to you. But still a young horse with plenty of potential going forward. There will be more days there.
Yeah, he was unlucky, wasn't he, earlier in the Badger Beers chase when coming home with a wet sail in that race as well. From a bookmaking point of view, Paul Binfield, you'll be relieved. We're finally going to give you some airtime. What did you make of this race?
No, not relieved, Maddie, no. Lovely to join you guys, particularly James Stevens. Cambridge United finally got a result at Newport County a couple of weeks ago. going back to the racing, it was an interesting end to the season. Probably not what we really wanted. I hope James backed Enrillo with Paddy because we paid out on the double result, which was, you know, costly enough anyway, as Enrillo was a 7-2 favourite. But we also refunded winning stakes on Kitty's Light. So the race wasn't ideal from a bookmaking point of view, but I think the lads, the racing experts on the postcast have already summed it up, Maddie. You know, Kitty's Light, arguably very, very unlucky. Potterman, a fortunate winner. And Enrillo, you know, ran a brilliant race. And unfortunate that he bumped Kitty's Light. But intriguing, whatever we say about it.
Yeah, and it's food for thought for next season, of course. We're going to talk a little bit more about the remaining big jumps races of this season at Punchestown this week later on in the show. But now let's remain at Sandown and let's talk about Bryony Frost and Paul Nicholls, because they enjoyed a fantastic Saturday, even withstanding Enrillo's defeat, with Frodon and Greenatine winning the Oaksy Chase and the Celebration Chase. Now, Frodon, I don't think he was at his best, but this horse is just a star and wonderful to watch. And he got the better of Mr. Fisher to win the former. And Greenatine, well, fascinating tactics from the Altior team. Nico de Boinville was positive from the word go. There were some no-shows in behind from the likes of So Royal and Put the Kettle On. But the young horse, who was just fourth or fifth in the Champion Chase the time before, wreaked his revenge and could well go on to better things next season. Bin, is there any markets for Frodon or Greenatine?
Yeah, we put Greenatine into the Queen Mother Champion Chase at 12-1 first show, Maddie. And Frodon, what a battling performance. You know, it's easy for me to say this now after the event, but when Mr. Fisher went past him, I thought there's one horse that, you know, can battle back and do this, and it's Frodon. And sure enough, he did. What a tough performer. A great partnership with Bryony. We weren't terribly impressed. Mr. Fisher is a good horse in his own right and a lovely horse. I wouldn't mind owning him myself. But we left Frodon unchanged at 16-1 for the King George. Just a brilliant end to the season, seeing Bryony ride so well.
Indeed, it was, wasn't it? And perfect that they could bow out for the year in that fashion. Mark, I mean, I don't think Chuck and Bossoir would be too afraid of Greenatine, no?
Which, you know, I'm head of the fan club there. Although, to be honest, I'm not overly bullish. I'm not overly bullish about Chuck and Bossoir now on Tuesday at Punchestown. I'd be a little bit concerned after a hard year. But I don't think that race on Saturday was at the same standard as what we'll see on Tuesday with Alaho, Shaq and Persuas, First Flow, New Bay Negra. I think that was a little bit of a step above. Put the kettle on after an absolute grueler of a run at Cheltenham. Just didn't seem to fire. Didn't really take.
Wasn't happy from the word go, was she, when she made that mistake?
No, I'd agree. She just didn't take a cut at her fences. And you see that at Sandown sometimes when horses don't. I wouldn't judge her too harshly for it. Altier, in fairness, there was signs of life there, but not enough to think that, for me anyway, not enough to think that as a 12-year-old you come back and win a champion chase, although Nicky is the man to do that. Yeah, Grantine is the up-and-comer in that division. He's, you know, a horse I have a good bit of time for, probably a little bit disappointed with him at Newbury, and just lost a little bit of faith, but he is classy, he's going the right way, and you know, one of these typical Nichols improvers, you know, well able to hold their own in deep waters. And there'll be a good season ahead for him next year, no doubt. But in terms of an overall standard of form, I'd like to think that tomorrow will be probably a little bit more informative for us at Punchestown. Really looking forward to it.
Yeah, agreed there. I'm not sure Cheltenham or even necessarily softer ground is Greenatine's bag either. But James, let's go back to Altior, because it was good to see him step in the right direction, wasn't it? And I mean, I laugh when I say it, but he still looks like a horse who wants a step up in trip and softer ground to me.
Yeah, can't agree with you more there. I mean, people sort of are very quick to say whether he'll win a champion chase or not. I mean, for Altior and then everyone associated with him, just seeing him win a race again would be nice, wouldn't he? He's at that age now. I mean, if he comes back and can win a couple next season, that's great. I mean, yeah, maybe he does want a little bit further, but I think more so the ground for him now. I mean, sometimes horses do that, don't they? Sort of get older and they sort of take a liking to it. I mean, it might be that he needs a race, almost like a Schlur chase or something like that, where the competition's not too red hot and he can just sort of dominate things and do it his own way. But yeah, he looked back to a decent level, didn't he? You know, you're not going to be backing him for a champion chase off that, but yeah, the winner.
Why not, though, James? He beat Put the Cat on by 17 lengths.
Yeah. Well, he was fading at the end, a bit like Cambridge United's title hopes. but Grenadine's an interesting horse, because I followed this horse since he won the Heldon Gold Cup. He's actually 3-3 now when Frost has ridden him. So that's going to be interesting for next season as well. Whether she perhaps is going to spark a bit more improvement out of him, but she's going to need to, because Shishkin's going to be on the scene next season and that's not going to be easy.
I was going to say, I must admit, when I was watching the celebration chase on Saturday, I thought he would have eaten them all alive, surely, Shishkin. But anyway, now, more talk of jumps racing. Who'd think it when we've got the Guineas just coming up this weekend? But Punchestown, the festival gets underway tomorrow, so we're going to see what Mark's thinking about the first card on day one. Stay with us.
Paddy Power are streaming all UK and Irish racing on our app. No bet required. Just log in and watch. Terms and conditions apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Okay, welcome back to the Monday Postcast. As I mentioned, the Punchestown Festival gets underway tomorrow. Mark Boylan, our man in Ireland. We're going to let James and Binners have a word too, don't worry. But we've got the three grade ones tomorrow. What are your thoughts? What are your fancies?
Initially, a little bit disappointed with the turnout for the 2 mile grade one novice hurdle. Obviously, no appreciated, which is a big loss to the race. And I think it's cut up plenty. Paul Townend rides Blue Lord, which I was slightly surprised by. I thought Echoes and Rain, the way she won at Fairy House, was extremely impressive. Now, potentially for a man that's coming back for his first ride after a foot injury, a free going mare like that, who, when she wants to go, you're going. Maybe that's not the ideal sort of spin for you. And although I'm sure he's well able for it, but just Blue Lord, when there was maybe splitting hairs between the two of them, possibly that might have been a little factor in it. But I suppose he's rated £7 clear of her as well. But it's between those two. And if I was trying to get a market there without the top two, Colonel Mustard is the outsider of the whole field, and I wouldn't be surprised if he nipped into third. Really gorgeous horse, with a lot of class about him, improving with each run. Will like that ground, and ran a really lovely race behind Echoes and Rain at Fairy House. He'll get closer to her this time, I think, sharpening up again. It was his first run since January. I think he's a really, really nice horse for Lorna Fowler next season, and I wouldn't be surprised if he outran his odds. And if I get a price on without the top two, I'd be interested there. Obviously, we have the Grade 1 Champion Chase, absolute dinger of a race. Shaq and Persuad and Adaho had two hard races at Cheltenham, as did Nube Negra, I suppose. It's one that I don't have a firm opinion on, to be quite honest. I'd love to be telling you here that I'm absolutely bullish about one. But I'm really, really torn, because Adaho, the performance he put up in the Ryanair, I just have to have a concern that it might have left a mark. It was just jaw-dropping. It was so good. And Shaq and Persuad has kind of had a harder year this year than he's ever really had, considering he's had his little issues. And Nube Negra, it's a bold shout from Dan Skelton. I have to take my cap off. Really, really have to applaud him for coming over and having a go. Obviously, there was that line earlier in the year where he mentioned that Willie was getting, I won't say the F word, the freebie word, with some of these Grade 1 races in the run-up to Cheltenham, that it was helping their preparation. And I have to say, I have big respect for him coming over, and I hope to God he runs a big one. It's a race that's been kind to British horses down through the years. I think they've won 9 of the last 22 run-ins of it. I think he'd obviously go well, but it's not one of a firm opinion. I think Silius Emery will run better than his price suggested, 25-1, but the two places rather than three, by virtue of being seven runners, is off-putting. And then, sure, listen, if you're not excited by Envoy Allen against Monkfish, you can hang up this podcast now. Like, I'm absolutely, it's amazing. We didn't think we'd get this clash so soon. We were thinking, we get to see it next year. Will they dodge each other? Oh God, this is it. Like, I cannot wait.
Which camp are you in then? Come on, tie
Monkfish for me. Just to think in Vialan, although Monkfish wasn't at his best at Cheltenham, he was still got the job done. I think there'll be this will suit him well. I think the way the race will set up. Envoy Allen has to prove himself over 3 miles, whereas Monkfish has been there and done that. I listen, Rachel's never ridden Envoy Allen before. Paul knows Monkfish like the back of his hand. There's not going to be much between them at the prices. But I'll come down on Monkfish's side for now. And just actually, Carl Reevey, just to mention before I let the lads give their thoughts on it, she's going to probably have her last start, as what William Mullins mentioned during the week. She's been covered by Walk in the Park. What a great mare she's been for the Flynns, who owned and bred her, I should say. Grade 1 winner at the Punchestown Festival in a bumper, won a Grade 1 at Christmas at Leopardstown, or to Limerick, I should say, and beat Ellie May in the Mayor's Chase with showing an unbelievable heart. So it'd be nice to see her run well on her final start, but it's all about the big two, isn't it?
It is. Cole Reevey, it's wonderful to see her running, at least. It does add another dimension to it, but it's got to be between the main two, hasn't it? I mean, Binners, who can you see going off favourite? Because I think in the long term, Monkfish could end up that sort of Gold Cup future star. But if we're talking about now, perhaps Envoy Allen has his measure. The ratings say so. He's £1 better than Monkfish.
Yeah, I think you've summed it up, Maddie. It's such a close call, isn't it? You know, we're currently evens Monkfish, 6-5 Envoy Allen, and then 8 Cole Reevey, who, as Mark said, has been a tremendous servant to the Flynns. She's been brilliant. Well done to them. And Franco Deport at 40-1. But personally, if I was going to have a bet in the race, Maddie, you can make cases for Monkfish and Envoy Allen. Of course you can for both of them. Monkfish, Mark's already mentioned, not his brilliant best at Cheltenham, but he got the job done despite that, which is what champions do. Envoy Allen took a tumble early on, which was unfortunate. But if I was going to have a bet, I would bet on whichever one of the two goes off at the bigger price.
Smart. And James, quickly, who's your verdict? Monkfish or Envoy Allen?
I'm going to go against Monkfish with Benbow Allen, just because I thought he's had the sort of, he went down at the first, he'd be a bit of a fresher horse. And to be honest, I think he's a bit of a monster as well. So, yeah, a cracking race, isn't it?
So looking forward to that one. Quickly, a quick fire question for you all. One jumps horse to take out of the season, or a best performance or a ride that you liked, Binners. I'll let you go first.
Well, Maddie, I'm sticking with my old friend Max McNeil's Tritonic. He could only muster fifth to Quilexios in the Triumph Hurdle, but the excitement that he gave Max and his buddies and his friends and his family was immense. Myself and my friend Jason Cook, we interviewed Max down at his place the night before the race. He was so excited. He gave them a good run, but he arguably came up against some good horses, including the front two. Quilexios looks really good. It was brilliant the day he hacked up in the Adonis. He looked a real tool that day, and I'm sure they'll have a nice horse for next season. And interestingly, I don't know if he's going to run, but he's entered in a 10 furlong handicap at Chelmsford on Thursday. So down to earth for Tritonic.
You wouldn't be surprised, would you, with his connections? I'm sure he'll have another profitable season. Mark, your highlight.
Tiger all around the cross country. That got me absolutely out of my seat. Loved it. Thought that the old horse was finished, and he just keeps surprising you. You can never ride off the Tiger. Hope to God we'll see him back again next year in the cross country to do it all over again. That would nearly mean as much to me now as if he went and won another national. Got such a kick out of it for Keith Donoghue in particular. And if you're on to mention a ride of the season, no arguments here. Hugh Morgan on Young Dev. If you see a better ride than that now over the next five seasons, give me a ring. You won't. It was absolutely awesome. Well worth watching back.
Yeah, fantastic that, wasn't it? I don't think we'll be forgetting that one for a long time. Some display of horsemanship. And James, for you?
My highlight, Maddie, was definitely Native River in the restaged Cotswold Chase. What a day. I might give you a ring, Mark, and tell you to watch Motter Mott win the bumper at Chepstow. James Brown.
Hey.
That was one of the most bizarre moments I've had on course ever. I have to say, and seeing him sort of ponied back at Chepstow especially, it was sort of like the Kentucky Derby or something. It was extremely bizarre. Blimey, what a strange race it was. And also Charlie Todd winning on first man at Wincanton, almost came down at the last and stayed on to win. It's been an extraordinary year for sort of on the track stuff, and blimey, those two, to see them live was just beyond belief, especially in so close together.
Okay, brilliant. Now, coming up this weekend, we have obviously the Punchestown Festival this week, and then we have the Guineas. So let's see if the guys fancy anything for either of those two things. Let's clarify some sort of main fancies from you. Mark, any horses you want to bring into it?
I like Wonderlish tomorrow in the 450, the big handicap hurdle. I thought he'd run a big one in the Galway hurdle when he was rated 1.44. He's 1.42 now, and he has his ground and blew away the cobwebs at a nice run of Cork earlier in the month. I think if all falls right with him, he'll take a fair bit of beating. And he's a price too. He's around 12-1. I think he'll run well. And you can get nice each way terms if you're feeling that way inclined. I'm sure someone will be offering them there. And then otherwise, I think Yaya Baby, she runs on Thursday as far as I'm aware. Well, she's entered for Thursday. We haven't got the declarations yet. We've got Tuesday and Wednesday as we speak, but we haven't got Thursday. Runs in the opening race, the 3.40, I'd imagine. Trained by Jessica Harrington, has won three of the last six runs of it. She struck with either 8-1, 10-1, 16-1. They're always good prices. She even had a horse finish second at 10-1 another year. And she gets a nice allowance here as a four-year-old filly. And I think she'll go very close off a low weight. The second and the fifth have won from her last start. So, yeah, baby, in the 3.40 on Thursday.
And super, you'll be taking on Santa Barbara on Sunday, at least, according to your another view.
Yeah, I think you have to. I think you have to at the prices. Like, there's a chance you'll drift at the weekend. But no, I think I'd have to. Pretty Gorgeous is where I'm going to be nailing my colours to the mast. She's done zero wrong, and she's always been a standout. She's always been top class. And, you know, while I have loads of respect for Santa Barbara, she could be a serious, serious, serious horse. And they're not far wrong when they do have an opinion on them down there in the regard that she's held. But, you know, to me, Pretty Gorgeous is the here and now. And I think Santa Barbara might well prove to be the best horse in time, but maybe not on Sunday. She might need the run.
Thanks very much. And I know you mentioned Thunder Beauty for Ken Condon. I think it was either last week or the week before. I had a look. I think she could run a big one, you know. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, definitely. Unexposed, you know, really looks like her three-year-old year will be her year rather than two. You can forgive her last run in heavy ground. And I think as a result, you're getting a decent price. And aside from that, she's not far off them in the mile there, which is, you know, the key race for two-year-old fillies last year, I thought, in Europe. You know, I really have an awful lot of time for her. I think she'll run well for Ken Condon, top-class trainer.
And what about the colts, Mark, before we let the others have a say?
Oh, tougher race, isn't it? I don't know. Sure, Godolphiner have some hand at the moment and everything that they're looking at. One ruler, the talk has obviously been incredibly strong with him. I'm just coming down slightly on St. Mark's Basilica over Thunder Moon. Just think he's always been held in that high regard in Ballydoyle for him to run him straight into Group 1 off the back of a maiden run where he got beat. I think he might have went off favourite that day and all in the Phoenix. It seemed like last year he was doing everything and he was kind of in a rush playing catch-up, whereas it seems like they might have got a clear run at him this time around. Wembley is obviously there for him too, but just think the St. Mark's Basilica course form has plenty going for him. And I'd say now he won't be, it would be very disappointed if he wasn't in the tree anyway, but it's that sort of race, isn't it? It's incredibly open.
Okay, James, your thoughts on Punchestown and the Guineas?
Yeah, I'll start off with the Guineas. I'm a big fan of Thunder Moon. I think if he sort of can stay the mile as well, he stays a seven, I think he'd be a really, really smart horse this season, so he'd be the one. But excuse me, I did speak yesterday to Angus Gold, and the sort of fire in the sort of camp of Mr. Beck for the Guineas is really interesting. They seem pretty hopeful of a big run, which is no surprise considering they've paid 30 grand to put them in on Monday afternoon. A thousand guineas, I just can't work it out. I mean, I did join in on the Santa Barbara gamble. I'm not ashamed of that at all. So I'm sort of going to watch that one and just sort of see what happens with her. But I didn't think there's anything wrong with Saffron Breach's run the other day. And I think that she's still sort of lightly raced, improving, and could be an improving one. I think of Punchestown, there's not too many I'm going to be watching on, really, more than punting, I think. But Midnight Run for Joe O'Brien is a horse that caught my eye. He's got some decent form. He's back over hurdles and is in the 450. It's a two-mile, half a furlong sort of handicap hurdle. Got some really smart form and was beaten by Captain Guinness of Fences last time. If you go through his sort of form, it's pretty decent. He's off 140. I don't know. He could be sort of an improving horse, and we know how well sort of we see in Ireland so often how these sort of horses tested at a really good level, dropped into handicaps and just sort of exploded onto the scene. So he's been off since December. He's won off a break before. So, yeah, interesting to see what he can do.
Thanks very much, James. And Ben, has anything caught your eye?
Well, Maddie, the first horse I'm going to give you depends on the brilliant Ben Blackmore producing this show. Brendan Duke has a runner at Nace this evening in the 5:10. Dr. Brown Bear, currently trading at 50-1, but Brendan is raving about this horse. You know, he might not be good enough to win first time out, but listeners should certainly keep an eye on this one. He really does think a lot of this horse. It'll be worth looking at today. I should give have a quick look at the Paddy Power Champion Hurdle at Punchestown on Friday as we sponsor it. Honeysuckle has been brilliant, looks the best two-miler in jumps racing over hurdles. But we're offering a 100 grand bonus if a UK-trained horse can overcome her. I'd like to see the likes of Epitonte or possibly Goshen. Goshen, I think, is quite a big price at 8-1. I'm not sure if he can beat Honeysuckle, but he hung badly right at Cheltenham and should be suited by Punchestown for that reason. He was only 8th at Cheltenham, but we've written him off before. He was last in the International Hurdle and he bounced back in the Kingwell. So hopefully Goshen can do good things at Punchestown on Friday. Looking at the 2,000 guineas, I'm going along with Mark. I like St. Mark's Basilica, the Dewhurst winner, always the best race in England. Admittedly soft ground that day and Ryan Moore deserted him for the runner-up Wembley, but Ryan did pick him in the National Stakes before that and he wasn't beaten far, just done for second. I think the extra mile should suit him. And looking at the fillies equivalent, the 1,000 guineas, Santa Barbara, yeah, I saw the rave comments from Aidan O'Brien when she was still 8-1, and I didn't get on, and she's 6-4 favourite now. So well done to James for actually being on her. But I'm going to go with Mother Earth. She was third in the Fillies Mile. It was soft ground that day, first time at a mile. And then she ran a brilliant race in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf, second to the clear winner on a faster surface. And at a double-figure price, I think she might give us stable companion something to do.
There you have it, then. This week's postcast has had absolutely everything, hasn't it? All the big topics covered, as well as some fantastic racing over jumps and the flat coming up. Bruce and the team, we'll be back as usual on Friday to preview the action in more depth. In the meantime, best of luck with your bets at Punchestown, and we'll see you again in a week's time.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.